I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. I'm your host, Jason Galloway, with the Wisconsin State Journal. Now, we already did one episode of The Red Zone this week. You can go check that out if you haven't listened to it yet. We talked to Jesse Temple from Land of 10 about this Orange Bowl matchup coming up here on Saturday, about how Wisconsin has been, has gotten over the loss to Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship game over these last few weeks. And we also talked about the early signing period, too, and why that's benefiting Wisconsin. So go check that out if you haven't already. This is our mailbag edition of the podcast, where I take your questions that I've already asked for on Twitter and do my best to answer them here in podcast form. This is our last one of the year. I will be doing a live chat after Saturday's Orange Bowl. If you guys join me on Twitter there, it'll be pretty late since the game is late. But for you Night Owls, I'll be up doing a live chat at some point. Just follow me on Twitter at Jason_Galloway, and I'll let you guys know Saturday night exactly, what time I'll be going on to take your questions and getting some post-game reaction after the Badgers play Miami. But let's go ahead and get to our questions for the week. Let's see. Let's start with Steve at SCX_2. He asks, is UW going to need another new defensive coordinator next year? That's a good question. I think Jim Leonard is, I talked to Jim Leonard a couple of weeks ago, just about, jobs that were sure to be coming his way. This is before all the Florida State rumors and all that stuff happened. Cause I knew he was going to be, we all kind of knew his name would be floating around out there after, after what he did with the defense this year and how good the defense was. Back a couple weeks ago, he basically said, he's going to listen to offers and he's going to, if phone calls come his way, he's definitely going to listen to them, but he's also really happy with Wisconsin and he's in no hurry to leave Madison. And he spoke here, on Wednesday, or I guess it was Thursday of this week, here in Miami. And he got asked about the Florida State rumors, right? I asked him about the Florida State rumors and he said, he basically took the same kind of approach. He actually said he's had some conversations with some teams, plural, which was, that's pretty interesting. He said he's had conversations with multiple teams basically, but he also said, reiterated, like he said a couple weeks ago to me, that he is very happy at Wisconsin, that, he's not really looking to leave, but he thinks he's earned the right to hear what's coming his way and to see what's out there. So, I think from everything I've heard, just from talking to him a couple of times, and I don't really have any inside information on this, but I'd have to think that, he's still a young guy. He's still only 35 years old. He's got a lot of time to move up the coaching ladder. He's only in his, second year as a coach right now, and he's already the defensive coordinator for a Power 5 team, a really good one in that. And I don't think he would leave this year for another collegiate defensive coordinator job. I know Florida State could pay him a lot more money than Wisconsin, or they probably would be at least be willing to pay him more money. But I just don't think he's necessarily, I don't think he's necessarily looking for that right now. I think he knows he's in a good situation here at Wisconsin. He knows the place. He obviously, this is home for him. He played here he played in Madison. And I just don't think he's in a real rush to leave. Now, if a really good opportunity came up, obviously the NFL regular season ends this weekend and there's going to be jobs opening up there. And the coaching carousel for the NFL is about to really start here, even though there's already been some firings, but there's going to be a lot of openings, in January for NFL teams. And obviously he's only 3 years removed from playing in the NFL and he still has a lot of contacts and relationships in the NFL. And I'm sure that some people might be interested in him in some kind of capacity at that level, if not this season, then eventually. So, some really good opportunity could still come up for him. We'll have to wait and see on that. As far as I know, I don't think he's been offered, any NFL job right now or, or any head coaching position at college or the NFL level. But I just don't, you know, based on what he said, I just don't think he's going to, you know, jump ship for, you know, the same, to take the same position at Florida State, even if that involves making, you know, a little more money. So if I had to guess, I'd say he's, I guess, along with the way to answer your question, I don't think they're going to need a new defensive coordinator. That could always change. Something could always come up. And, you know, I'm not really inside his head or involved in his thought process, obviously. You know, maybe he's more interested in the Florida State job than I think he would be. But if I had to just take a guess, I would say he's back next year. But I don't really expect him to be here, you know, his whole career or anything, or maybe not even in the next few years. But I think for this season, I don't think he's going to jump ship super, super early unless there's a really good situation out there for him. John Hermanson at John Hermanson asks, early thoughts on next year's team. Is the returning talent on offense enough to make up for all the losses on D plus a harder schedule? You know, I'm pretty optimistic about next year's team. You mentioned all the returning talent on offense. You know, if all their offensive linemen come back and you know, Dieter doesn't go pro early and Benshaw doesn't go pro, then they could have 10 starters returning on the offense. You know, Troy Fumagalli would be the only one that, you know, that wouldn't be returning. And, you know, you like those prospects of what the offense can give you if all five of those offensive linemen, you know, are back. You know, Alex Hornibrook has another year of experience. You get Quintez Cephas back after he suffered an injury. You know, a lot of your other young receivers really stepped up late in the season. So you're going to be really deep at that position. You know, Fumagalli is a huge loss, but if you get Xander Neville back from a blocking capacity and Kyle Penniston kind of steps up and can play a bigger role, then I think it's not, you know, it's not a disaster. It may not be a disaster to lose Fumagalli next year if that happens. And obviously you've got Jonathan Taylor for at least the next 2 years. So I think their offense is going to be a lot better next year if those offensive linemen return. And, you know, I think defensively, I feel a little bit better than I did maybe when this season began about some of the holes that they're going to have to replace. I think particularly at outside linebacker, you know, obviously they're going to have to lose both their starters for the second straight year in Garrett Dooley and Leon Jacobs. But I've been really impressed with what I've seen from Andrew Van Ginkle this season. And Tyler Johnson as well has, I think when he's gotten opportunities, he's really stepped up and made plays. And he's a guy, you know, we didn't know much about before this season. You know, he played very sparingly as a redshirt freshman in 2016, but really weren't able to see what he was all about and what he could do until this season. And I think between Van Ginkle, Tyler Johnson, and then Zach Bond, who's been injured the entire season, which he's easy to forget about because he's been injured so much. But if he can come back healthy and you have those three guys, I think you can be okay there. And you know, even if T.J. Edwards leaves early for the NFL, you've got Ryan Connolly and Chris Hoare as starters at on the inside. Now you have to kind of build a little bit more depth there if that happens, but I think you can possibly do that. The defensive line, I think, you know, your three starters are going to be fine. You know, I think Isaiah Laudermilk is going to have a huge year next year. Sangopolu comes back for one more year, and I have a feeling that Garrett Rand is going to move back to defensive end and possibly start for this team. I think that's his most natural position, and you know, he's needed to play nose these last couple years for, you know, because the team needed him there. But I think he's going to end up being an end here, and I think he'll have a really good chance to start. And I like all three of those players. You know, we'll have to see. The depth behind them is probably one of the biggest concerns. You know, if they, you know, you have Billy Hirschfeld there, I think another year. You know, you have a couple of young guys that maybe could step up. But as of right now, you wonder, you know, you kind of wonder about the defensive line depth. And in the secondary, you know, if Nick Nelson leaves, then you have, you know, Dante Carey-Williams, I think, is ready to step up as a starter. I think he's going to have a really good season next year. Your next corners after that are probably Madison Cone and, you know, possibly Caesar Williams. So those guys are really untested. And if Nelson leaves, one of those guys is going to have to start. That's probably, I would say, the biggest concerns defensively next year. If Nelson leaves, are probably, you know, who's your number two cornerback and is he good enough? And then do you have enough depth on the defensive line? I think those are probably the two big areas of concern. And if they can answer those, and if Madison Cone or Caesar Williams or both of them steps up and really plays well and surprises us and they build a little bit more depth on that defensive line, then the defense really might not have as much of a drop off as it seems like it should with losing let's see, how many starters are they losing? 3, 4, 5. I mean, 6 or 7 starters, probably 7. If Edwards and or possibly even more than that. I can't count right now. I should have done this before I pressed the record button, but they're losing a lot of starters defensively, and I think that, if they can address those couple areas, though, that they can go into next season and feel good about the defense not taking a big drop off. And if your offense can get a lot better, then I think the outlook for the team is pretty good. Now, it also could go the other way. They could have a couple big weak links defensively that they didn't have this year, that they haven't had for a couple years. We'll have to wait and see on that. We'll see how some of those young guys develop, especially at the cornerback position, and we'll have to see. Obviously they've got to play, like you mentioned, a tougher schedule. They play at Michigan and they play at Penn State, so it's going to be tough. But I think with the tougher schedule, comes a situation where you can afford a loss and obviously still be right in the playoff race. So if they can, win one of those Michigan or Penn State games, then they'll definitely be right there possibly. They should be the class of the West again next year, but we'll have to wait and see if they're able to kind of manage the harder schedule and fill those holes on defense and really make a run at it again. Stuart Henning at BadgerFan82 asks, lots of chatter regarding Jim Leonard, not taking anything away, but isn't part of his success the players and system he inherited? I believe he's a good coach. Give him a few years to show he's great. I think Leonard is a really good coach. Now, I see where Stuart's coming from here. He's a guy that's only coached for 2 years. He's only been a defense coordinator for 1 season. And the whole time he's been coaching the 2 years, there's already been an established defense with a lot of great players and, a defense that was, like you said, already part of a really good system. I think the appeal of Leonard for a lot of people is, some of the stuff we don't see. I think Leonard, I think there's a reason why Paul Christ, after only 1 year of experience, promoted Jim Leonard to defensive coordinator over, a guy like Tim Tebasar, who's been a defensive coordinator before and has shown that he can do it. I think behind the scenes, when these coaches are working with Leonard and he's, talking football with them, I think you can just kind of tell that he's a really good football mind. He knows what he's doing. Leonard said from the very start he's very comfortable putting together a defensive game plan and calling plays, and he feels like that's natural for him. Obviously he doesn't, maybe for other teams you could see that as a little bit of a risk that he's, hasn't been doing it for very long and he has been in this good situation. But I think the reason why there's a lot of confidence from Wisconsin's perspective, especially last year when promoting him, is just, these guys have worked with him. These guys know Leonard, better than either of us do. So, they've been working with him and they know kind of how smart he is and what he's been doing with the defensive backs the last couple of years. And I think it's more of just, even during his NFL career, Leonard was always called a coach on the field. I've heard some stories about, how Leonard would just have the, freedom to even call plays defensively from the safety position sometimes when he was in the NFL. So I think this is, I think people in the business just kind of know what kind of football mind he is, and that I think people have known for a while among coaching circles that he was going to be a good coach someday, and that he was capable of doing that. So I think that's kind of where this fast rise comes from, is that people just kind of, I think people who knew him and people in coaching circles just kind of, somewhat knew this was coming, or at least knew that he had the football mind to be able to do this. So again, your point is very valid though, Stuart. I mean, he's only been doing this for 2 years and he's been part of a team that was already had an established defense and a lot of talent. So he still, hasn't, I guess you could say, completely proven himself as this great defensive coordinator. But I think that's where sort of the interest in him comes from. And, you know, with a few more years, we'll see how great he is. Like you said, you know, once he gets a few more years of experience and continues to put great seasons like this together, then we'll kind of see where he's at then. Todd Romance asks, why don't the Badgers audible? One would think it could be very effective at times. That's a good question, Todd. You know, it's hard to answer this because we don't always see how much freedom the quarterback does have at the line of scrimmage. Now, I don't think the Badgers are necessarily going up there and to the line. And, you know, Alex Hornibrook's not calling plays at the line of scrimmage, clearly. But I think he does make certain checks that maybe we don't know. I mean, I've definitely seen him, you know, make checks before and make decisions at the line of scrimmage. I think what he's actually checking to or what those decisions are, I don't really know. I don't think he's necessarily audibling, like you said, but, you know, I think he definitely has at least some freedom on some plays at the line of scrimmage. And I don't, you know, the thing about that, I mean, I don't think you see a whole lot of, you know, college quarterbacks with the freedom to go up there and completely change the play and have that kind of freedom. I think maybe next year when, you know, as quarterbacks progress and get more experience, maybe they that freedom does come and they get more and more freedom and they're able to do more things. And I think, you know, possibly next year when Alex Hornibrook is his third year starting games and he's had another offseason with Chris and he really understands the system, maybe we will see some of that. You know, I think it's easy to say, you know, why, you know, they should just be able to audible at the line of scrimmage to whatever they see, but it's I don't think it's quite as simple as that. I think, you know, I think everybody on offense has really got to be on the same page, and it's, you know, you have to have a quarterback that really has the ability to see certain things pre-snap. And like I said, I think he has made certain checks at the line of scrimmage this year. I don't really, you know, if I knew what the checks meant, then they would be, you know, they wouldn't, you know, that would defeat the purpose, because if I could figure them out. But I think maybe throughout the next couple of years, you know, as Hornibrook progresses, maybe you see a little bit more of that. You know, and again, I don't even know if we don't even know for sure if, you know, Hornibrook has the freedom on some plays to go to the line of scrimmage with a, you know, with a run pass option or anything like that. Now, I don't necessarily think that's happening. That's, you know, that's something that would be good for me to ask over the offseason maybe, and kind of figure out some of this stuff and exactly what they're doing at the line of scrimmage and things like that, and see how open the, you know, coaches and players are to kind of talking about that. But you know, I guess I don't know. You know, it's gonna be interesting to see kind of next year if they do a little bit more of that, and if they're, you know, if they're ready to give Hornibrook a little bit more freedom up there. But you know, I think especially considering the fact that their offense was very young this year, you know, they have a freshman running back, you know, they have some freshman receivers out there playing. If you do certain things like go to the line and have a, you know, try to audible a play or have a run pass option, it's, you just, I think a lot of times in college, you know, especially when you do have young players on the field, you kind of want to make it, you don't want to overcomplicate things. And I think a lot of coaches think that it would just lead to more problems if you try to overcomplicate it too quickly for some guys. So that might have something to do with it too. Now, like I mentioned earlier, with 10 starters returning offensively, especially with your quarterback going into his third year, maybe, you know, possibly we'll see a little bit more of that, you know, next year. But, you know, again, that's something that would be good in the offseason for me to kind of explore. So that's a good question, Todd. Troy Maragos, at Troy Maragos, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but he asks, players to watch for Miami, what are some of the biggest matchups that could tilt the game either way? Well, that's a good question. I think one of the big matchups in this game is Wisconsin's offensive line versus Miami's defensive line. You know, I think that if Wisconsin's able to get the running game going early, like they were not able to do against Ohio State, and they're able to win at the line of scrimmage, that's going to make things so much easier on Wisconsin's offense. It's going to, you know, if they're able to protect Hornibrook as well, it's going to maybe, you know, keep that turnover chain in its box and not allow, you know, Miami to get pressure on on Hornibrook and force him into mistakes. And, you know, I think that's really big. You know, you asked for a couple of players. I think a couple of guys on the defensive line to really look for, you know, RJ McIntosh, Chad Thomas. They're both really good players. I think they're number 80 and number 9. And, you know, Joe Rudolph was actually asked about this. He mentioned a couple guys, too. I think he mentioned Joe Jackson, who's I believe, is number 99. He said he creates problems, too, and has a lot of speed. And that's the thing. This Miami defensive front has a lot of speed, a lot of athleticism, sort of like Ohio State did. I don't think it's quite as talented as Ohio State's, but I think they could definitely create problems. And a lot of the reason why Miami has forced more turnovers than any Power 5 team this year is because of the pressure they get after the quarterback and the play of that defensive line. So I think if Wisconsin's offensive line is able to bounce back from the Big Ten Championship game and play really well in this game and win at the line of scrimmage, I think that's really going to be, you know, the biggest key for Wisconsin in this game. Andrew Fraser at AFraser87 asks, what are plans for fullback after Ingold? Would they ever use a scholarship on one? Yeah, they definitely would use a scholarship on one. I think it just kind of depends on if they find the right guy and the right fit. So, you know, Ingold, I think, has he only has one more year after this, doesn't he? He did play in 2015, I believe, as a true freshman, if I'm remembering correctly. So, yeah, I think in this next class, the 2019 class, maybe they'll be looking for somebody to kind of take over there, or they definitely moved players in the past. You know, Ingold wasn't really necessarily a fullback right when he came in. You know, he was a linebacker, then moved to running back, and then eventually to fullback. So I think that they could definitely explore, especially with Ramish leaving this year, they'll probably explore, you know, a couple position switches where they try a couple guys out at fullback and see if it works. Maybe they have their eye on a guy for a scholarship. In 2019, I'm not really sure about that. You know, Aaron Maternowski, who's, been on the team for a couple of years now, he's a guy that maybe could step up and play a little bit more in the coming years. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Not really sure, you know, if they're looking for a specific, you know, player on the recruiting trail that could play fullback. I don't really know about that. But that is something to start thinking about, though, with Ramish leaving and then Ingold only having one more year, I believe. That's a really good question. We'll end with a couple questions from Bill Feller at Bill_Feller91. He asks, his first question is, if Bo Benshaw goes to the NFL, does Kapoy replace him at right guard or someone else? You know, I don't think Kapoy would be the replacement. I think between, you know, the few guys that have played a lot this year that could play right guard, I think between Michael Dieter, John Dietzen, and Jason Erdman, I think they'd probably move one of those guys over there. You know, I'm pretty sure the thing about it, I think your two best guards might be Dietzen and Dieter at that point, but they've both only played left guard. Now, I'm sure Dieter would be capable of playing right guard. I think Jason Erdman has played right guard in the past, and he could as well. So I don't think it would necessarily be Kapoy, but I do think they'd have a couple options there to maybe move somebody from the left side if Benshaw does leave. I would say I don't think Benshaw's going to end up leaving. You know, he told the media a couple weeks ago that he would need a pretty high grade to be able to make the jump, and I just don't know if he's going to be, you know, projected as you know, in the first couple rounds. So I don't know. If I had to guess, I think he would be back, but that's kind of what I think they would do if he's gone. I think they would move one of those guys from the left side over to right guard. And your second question kind of goes along with that. You ask if Dieter goes to the NFL, do you see David Edwards moving to left tackle and Castle playing right tackle? Yeah, this kind of goes hand in hand here. You know, I think if this is probably a lot more likely for Dieter to leave than Benshaw. I think if Dieter goes, I do think that will actually. I think that might happen anyway. Even if Dieter doesn't go, you know, Dieter has talked about the last few weeks about how it would be pretty strange if he were to return to school and play basically out of position for two straight seasons, and go to the NFL next year, having played a position he's not going to play at the NFL for two straight years. And so that indicates to me that he's either going to leave early or he's going to move back to guard or center next season if he returns. So I think either way, they're going to have to shuffle this offensive line a little bit.
So I think if Dieter goes, then yeah, I think that you just kind of keep developing Cole Van Landen and Patrick Castle at the positions you have them at. You know, Van Landen's been working at left tackle, Castle's been working at right tackle, and I think that, you know, if you kind of whichever one is better, that's where you move Edwards. If Castle's the one that looks like he's progressing further than Van Landen, then you move David Edwards to left tackle and keep Castle at right tackle. And if Van Landen's the one that kind of pushes ahead of Castle, then you play, you know, Van Landen at a left tackle and keep Edwards at right tackle. I think it's easier for those young guys to kind of concentrate on one position. I don't think you want to be moving those guys around. So I think it's a matter of, you know, I think Edwards has shown in practice that he's capable of playing both sides. And they moved David Edwards to left tackle at the start of spring practice last year. So I think they know that he can play both spots. But I think that where he would play would probably depend on which one between Van Landen and Castle is kind of ahead of the other one. And I think if Dieter does come back, that what I just mentioned will probably still happen, but Dieter would probably move back to left guard, and Dietzen and Urban would probably, you know, head to the bench would be my guess. That's assuming Benshaw's back as well. So I think you could possibly have at that point, I think you'd have Dieter at left guard, Biotic at center, Benshaw at right guard, and then Edwards at one of the tackles and one of those young guys at the other tackle position. So, you know, I think what they're really hoping is that Van Landen or Castle, at least one of those two, really takes a jump this offseason and makes a leap and they feel comfortable starting one of those guys at tackle. So that's kind of what I see on the offensive line. I guess I did mention that 10 starters would be returning next year if Dieter comes back, but I guess there would probably be two new starters regardless if they do move Dieter back to the inside and he would kind of take the, you know, the Dietzen Erdman spot at left guard, at least I think he would, and then you'd have a new starter at tackle. But again, I think those two were both highly rated recruits that they feel really good about and they feel like are making progress from everything, you know, Joe Rudolph has told us. So we'll have to see if one more offseason can get them ready to be a starter, at least one of them. And I think if Dieter comes back, then you have, you know, a really, really good, you know, interior of the line if he plays left guard again. And then Edwards, of course, has been, you know, playing at an All-American level this year. And if, you know, he's already said he's coming back. So if he's in one of your tackle positions, you're in really good shape there too. Thanks for all the questions, guys. That's going to be it for this week. Again, like I mentioned earlier, join me for the Twitter live chat I'll be doing late Saturday night after the Orange Bowl. And keep visiting madison.com for all of our coverage throughout this week and after the game as well. Thanks for listening.